mentioned that we already knew, for example, about the 40 days. Karabosai. We already knew about the 40 days. And there, in general, there's tremendous amounts of repetition. And furthermore, it's not clear what was happening to the ark, when. So let's take a look at a few of the Mepharshim right on the opening. For example, before we see even Rashi, let's take a look at the first source on our sheet, Ibn Ezra. Ezra also, again, in a more systemic way, or overall, Rav Hoffman apparently has an essay, but already with the observation of the repetitiveness, Ibn Ezra says right away, we already know, we were talking earlier about the 40 days. So what is this pasuk adding? Im kain, ma tav yamabal al aretz arbam yom. What are we adding? Chaim perushu. This is the explanation. Kasher haya hamabul arbam yom al aretz. Not telling us a new thing. You know, I'm not sure how you would say it in English, but guess what? There was a 40-day flood. No, we already know that. What the implied word, the added word is the kasher. When there was this 40-day flood, which we knew about, when there was this 40-day flood, Rabu Hamayim, the waters were increasing, the Nasu HaTeva, and the ark was floating, the Gava Mehal Aretz, and it was lifted off the face of the earth. The Zeos says, the Ibn Ezra, a diuk, a very interesting diuk, Ki Ad Arba'im Yom, Lo Zaza Mim Koma. So interestingly, we have this tradition of 40 days, it rained for 40 days. Ibn Ezra, that's correct. But more, in addition, the ark was able to maintain its location for 40 days. Who knows if it floated around the whole world? I mean, who knows? I don't know if we'll ever know that, where and how much distance it covered when it floated. But that didn't occur, says Ibn Ezra, until 40 days. In other words, this pasuk isn't coming to tell us that there was a flood for 40 days. We knew that already. What's coming to tell us is that only after 40 days did the ark start to float. And in fact, this very much alludes or relates to Rashi's point. And Rashi has a very interesting point based on the Medrash. This is the first point that we can quibble with Joel on. Joel had a theory, which was a good theory. It just doesn't work with Rashi or the Medrash. Joel had a theory that the wall, that the, right, Joel's mentioned this a few times to us, that it, and therefore it rested on the surface of the water. Take a look at Rashi here. Rashi Yud Zayin. Right in the beginning. Meshukas Haisabamayim. No, it was submerged. The bottom part of the Teva actually was submerged. Oh, I thought you meant that.
I think it has sides. I wasn't saying that it. I just was. It could be flat, but with sides.
Of course, it had sides. I thought you. Okay, I mean, I don't want to get hung up. I'm only kibitzing with you, Joel. But I thought you had made the point at various points that you thought the it was resting on top of the water, as opposed to like a typical boat where you had part underneath.
This is a principle, Archimedes' principle, which means it's displacing the water. So that has to happen.
So what did you mean?
That the bottom was flat instead of like this.
And what do you gain by that?
Because I didn't think that he could build. I didn't think he could build a 200-yard. In order to build a boat like this, you have to have a single beam that goes
right
from one end.
Oh, okay. I misunderstood you. Okay. Okay. Fine. Anyway, either way, the point is, we haven't seen until now.
But the Radak still killed.
Yeah, we'll get. Yeah. You already peeked ahead at the Radak. Okay, I thought I had a 1-2 punch. In the end, my second punch will be enough to knock you out.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm just kidding with you.
But if I see a miracle, but he built the thing.
That's not necessarily clear. At this point, I don't think there's any makor whatsoever to or against what you're saying. I misunderstood you in terms of the issue of the floor.
Well, we'll get to that, because if it's bouncing around.
Oh, you think it has to be?
I don't know that Hallett would be able to.
Okay, fine. Well, I wasn't even thinking of that. Yeah. But I misunderstood you. I thought you had this, one of your two theories was that it was floating on top of the water. So I misunderstood you. Okay, well, either way, until now we haven't seen any sources.
Right.
Here we have the first source that tells us this explicitly. Mushkas Haisabamayim, that the Teva was submerged in water. Obviously the bottom part, not the whole thing. Achas Esrei Amma. 11 amos, which, depending on your perspective, might be, let's say, 16 feet. If you assume that the 15 is 22, and the levin is about 16 feet. Besfina to una, like it was a loaded heavy ship, it was being weighed down. And
very interesting. You can calculate from that exactly what the weight of the ship is.
Really?
Absolutely. It's because everything that flows displaces its weight in water. So you calculate the amount of weight.
Well, if you do me a favor, if you could do that for next week, I'd be very curious. I mean, it's a question of how much an amma is, but
1.5.
Yeah, but you could go for 16. You could go for 16.
16 amos.
Yeah, that's how much it was.
11 amos.
Huh?
11 feet. 11 feet. Yeah.
11 would be
amos, right?
16.5.
16.5 feet.
16.5.
Yeah, 11 amos would be about 16.
You know the width, you know the length, and then you can figure out.
Right, but then you'll do me a favor, just show me the end product, because I'm already getting cold sweats. I feel like I'm back in 10th grade. I could barely get through chemistry, algebra, forget anything more complicated. You already mentioned the Alchemides principle.
And it wasn't salt water. And it wasn't salt water.
Okay, you guys are scaring me already, okay?
Make it to the Shem right there.
Yeah, we could have a dual thing. You could go with Shalom Kelman to the OU now and all the places. We could do the science of Torah. Anyway, so he says here it was like a heavy-loaded ship. And, of course, it was very heavy-loaded. It had all the animals and all the people. And therefore, Shemeshuka'as Miktasa B'mayim. The bottom part was partially submerged in water. And he points out, he says, there'll be future psukim that will...
It was still resting on the ground. It was still resting. Even though it was submerged, it was still resting.
It wasn't floating yet. Right, that's the point. That the water was rising, but it had not created... The first step is just that the water is rising. But then, if you read the continuation of the pasuk, look back at the pasuk for a second, what I think it has to mean, it says, the Yisu Esateva... Must it have gotten a little bit? But the point was, it wasn't moving. Yeah, it wasn't moving yet.
A
little bit, right. But that point is, according to Ibn Ezra, Rashi doesn't say that took place only after 40 days. Rashi doesn't say one way or the other. But if you put the two together, Ibn Ezra suggests something amazing, that even that didn't occur until 40 days. I think we're right, but as it was clear, it didn't move. It didn't even move off the face of the earth, I think.
No, there's no indication from that. Those other men come on means maybe it didn't move forward or backward.
Okay, maybe.
In the same place. Which doesn't conflict with...
Right. It's certainly complementary to Rashi, and it may even be identical. So that's just a very, very interesting, I think, the science of it is certainly potentially interesting. And I think what's important from a pshat perspective, even for those of us who are not as smart as Joel and can't figure out the math, is that if you take a look at the next pasuk, why does the Medrash say all this? What do you need it for? Why is so many of this? Why have to come onto this? So I think the answer is because if you look at the next pasuk, there seems to be a contradiction. The pasuk in Yud Ches says, "V'yigvaru hamayim v'yirbu ma'od al arts v'teilach ha'teva v'amayim." It was already moving. So when is it moving? It's already moving there. It doesn't say anything about the 40 days. Whereas in the pasuk before that, So when did it just happen? Pasuk Yeches occurs on day 40 or 41, whatever. And that happens after the 40 days. But yet it's already said on pasuk Yitzayin that it was already somewhat displaced.
Yitches would seem to mean that it started to move away. As opposed to...
You could have said that. That's right. You could have said that. Right. So I think but the point is, what Rashi and Ibn Ezra are definitely saying, and perhaps may also be saying, is that it certainly wasn't moving away until day 41. And depending on how you want to read the Rashi and Ibn Ezra, they may even mean that it wasn't even lifted off the ground. It's hard to believe, but it may mean that. At the very least, it means that it didn't go anywhere. It was able to somehow stay in place. It was only after something occurred, things got more violent, as we'll see, after that, during the rainy time, as bad as it was, that it could almost withstand that. It was only after that, when the rain stopped, that things started, so to speak, started pushing it. Okay? And we will see the next pasuk in a minute, and other mafarshim, we'll see the Radak says something very interesting in this light as well. Take a look now at Rashi on pasuk Yud Ches. Oh, there is no Rashi. Yes, Yud Ches, I'm sorry. Yurches. So what changed? In light of this explanation, that somehow the Teva stayed where it was for 40 days. And that's when the rain was happening. You would have thought that that's the eye of the storm, if you will. So all of a sudden the rain stops after 40 days. And then all of a sudden, the waters increase. The Yigbaru Hamayim. What do you mean, the Yigbaru Hamayim? The rain stopped already. The rain for 40 days. So now it's the Yigbaru Hamayim, the Yirbu Ma'od Al Aretz. So what is Rashi? So again, I think clearly Rashi is bothered by that. If it's not raining, so in what way was the... But what was it? How was it increasing?
All the waters came together.
Says Rashi, Vigru, Me'elehen, by themselves. Now what does that mean? So you could have understood that way, and we'll see that Radak seems to go in that direction. But take a look at what the Sifsei Chachamim says. Sifsei Chachamim, as you may know, and we've seen this periodically in the Shir, Sifsei Chachamim is a commentary on Rashi. Right? A super comment on Rashi. He comes to tell you what was bothering Rashi. What was implicitly, what was coming, Rashi to answer. Sifsei Chachamim says, in locate, if you don't say that Rashi said that somehow this increase in water occurred on its own, V'lohaya ela minha tigvores hamayim b'pnei amabul shayeh b'toch mem yom. If you had thought that it was coming from the increased storm over 40 days, if that would be the case, imkein haya lo lahapoch ulechtov v'kra v'yihi mabul v'igru hamayim v'yirbu ma'od v'yusas ha'teva v'tar me'al aretz. The order of these two psukim should have been somewhat reversed. Rather, what do we have? Elavadai lahachik. So what's the point here? Here's the punchline. So what's the key for Rashi? That the phrase v'yigburu hamayim lebasof, it's written after, not just at the end, it's after, it's a new pasuk, after we heard about the rain. Lomar, Rashi understands that meant to tell us, shahatigbores, the increase of the water that we're talking about now, lo hayivnei amabul shebetoch hamem yom. It was not the result of the rain, the torrential rain of those 40 days, ela me'elav, by itself. So, number one, says Sifsei Chachamim, just pshat nechumash. What's the diuk? Rashi's diuk is that why is this idea of a yigbru hamayim in another pasuk after we hear about the conclusion of the 40 days? If you meant, which we would simply understand, the water level's rising, you can imagine, the Joe Weatherman with the rain hat on, in the lighthouse, water's rising. Since I last saw you, Bob, we're now at, 2 inches, and we're now at 4 feet, So that only happens during the rain. If the rain stops, then you measure how much water there is. It's not going to increase. So yet, if that was the case, the Yigbaru Hamayim should have been included in the same process as we're talking about the rain. So rather, Rashi, you see that this Vayigbaru, this increase in rain, apparently was not a result of the rain. It happened by itself. Now, what does that mean? So you might have said, you might have suggested what Hadol said, that maybe it was the waves or something, but the Sifsei Chachamim understands differently. He says something very interesting. What does that mean, me'elav? Kalomar, shahaya hatahom, ola me'elav. We've seen this before, the apostle talked before, these underground sources of water underneath the ocean floor, which we had heard earlier, part of the cataclysm of the flood was that they opened. So says Chachamim, that's what Rashi meant. Blended those opened after the 40 days. In other words, you almost had imagined, we made it, 40 days, the rain stopped. We can't get out of the boat just yet, but we know we are. And then all of a sudden, the second it stops raining, whoosh, all of a sudden, where's it coming from? There's this torrent pushing you up. So according to Chachamim, the water level is rising, even though it's not raining. Why? Because there's a secondary source, fuel, the waters. That's what he said. That's what Rashi means, me'elein. What does it mean by itself? It means not from the rain above. It means from the water sources below. Yes.
You have that even today when you have the news reports of the tornadoes or flooding in a certain area. Even though the rain has stopped, the waters continue to rise because streams and rivers and so on, and dams break and everything flows into the... And there's turmoil. So
interesting.
Just because it rains doesn't.
Interesting. Okay. Very good. That is interesting. So that's.
Right. But so then it's because it's flowing from higher elevations lower.
Here, everybody.
If everything's already covered, then really the elevation shouldn't be an issue anymore. So I don't think.
Right. No, I was gonna say that, or similar to what you were gonna say, I was thinking, Gene, that that's when it was flooding in one place, but not another place. But here, if the whole place was flooded, I don't know. Okay.
It's interesting because the usage, Rabbi, from the Tahom, understanding that the Tahom did not increase the quantity, but it must have increased the force.
No, he said, no, I think Rashi
would... By Yigbaru would not, well, why should it have said by Yerba?
So take a look. Very good. Yeah. You're anticipating the Ramban. But I do think the Sifra Chachamim is understanding Rashi that it means even the quantity of the water.
But again, he's using Gevura as opposed to...
It says Vayirbu is the next word. Yigburu and Vayirbu.
First it says Vayigburu.
Right, but exactly your question, your point, Harry, about what are the words, that's exactly what the Ramban comes to talk about. Look at the Ramban. The Ramban is also confused, not just you, Harry. The Ramban is also confused. It's very good company. Very good company. The Ramban is also confused. What do these words mean? Points out, he says, in the context of water, what does it mean to say gvura? Courage. I mean, you know, that's, you know, a gibor kovshe yisra. I mean, what, how does that relate to water? Says the Ramban, the tam, why does the pasuk use the form of a yigvru hamayim, or in a few psukim later, it says hamayim gavru. What does that verb, what does that form mean when it comes to water? So he mentions two shitas. The first opinion, which clearly Rashi, Sifra Chachamim are going like, shenisrabu ma'od. Quantity, more water. Kilu riboy gadol yikra lashin gvura. Taka says the Ramban etymologically, a great riboy, not just a little bit, but a tremendous increase, is taka called gvura. And could be v'itachein kitam b'yikvuru. I'm sorry, so that's his first answer. That's Ramban's first theory. However, his second theory, Harry, is exactly what you anticipated. Not the volume or the quantity, but the force or the strength. That's the second thing he says. V'itachein, maybe a second shot. Kitam b'yikvuru. Shahayu boyim b'shetef, the water came down during those 40 days, torrential downpour. V'okrim ilonos, it uprooted trees, v'mapilim habinyonim, it overturned the buildings. Im kain, yaperush gavru al ha'aretz, which is, again, another form of the same word used in the Pasuk Yutes. Shahayu b'gvurosam, kulam af al ha'harim hagvohim b'shotfim osam. That it covered and enveloped even the highest mountains, and it even submerged them. Again, it's a way of saying that it had a mighty force. Right? Very good. Very good. Very, very good. And the Radak here seems to combine the Pshatim and add a point, which Joel and I have been debating for weeks. You'll guess if I put it on the sheet whose side he takes. I'm just kidding. I hope you have a little bit more
fair and balanced.
Yes, yeah. I hope you have a little more faith in me. I would put it in anyway. But I was waiting for this Radak for weeks. The Yigburu Amayim says the Radak. Zeh Pasuk Balahosif Riboy Amayim. So the first thing the Radak says is like, oh, like Rashi, or the first opinion in Ramban, it's the quantity of the water. It just means, you know, one is 50 gallons, one is 100 gallons. It just means higher up on the same ladder. But then, Achar, it says, Yigburu Vayirbu. But after the first Vayirbu, then a Vayigburu, but then another Vayirbu. Another Vayirbu in the same pasuk. So once you've already said Vayigburu, if it just means quantity, why add the next Vayirbu? Lahodia ki ahit gabrut haisa biribui valorak b'chozek. So now he says, Enachanami, the Gvura meant Chozek, meant force. But you shouldn't think it was just force, it was also quantity. And then he adds the punchline. Put this into a context, you know, not just vague terms. What does it mean? Umitchila nosu osa hamayim al arts. One step was it just lifted the teva up off the ground. That took a certain level of force, a certain volume of water to get that boat up. But then when the water got even stronger, holicho osa hena hena, it threw them to and fro. Which is again something that I had always been assuming, but I didn't know the Radak. No, meaning hena hena means back and forth. It was a rocky ride. It wasn't simply resting on the water. It was choppy. There were waves. You know, there were currents.
We have a flat bottom workboat and heavy seas. That's why this argues that it couldn't be that.
Because it
flops. In other words, it slaps. It goes up and it flaps down. It's impossible.
But it doesn't go like this.
It doesn't do that.
I wonder which one he means when he says hena hena.
Well, it would have to
get
be,
back to your debate.
No, it would have to be.
Why? Well, maybe hena hena refers to what you just said.
Well, it would have to be maybe impossible to ride. Not impossible to ride, but would be a very uncomfortable ride.
Well,
you have a flat bottom.
And you mentioned it's very interesting. I was just looking at Viking tours. They have river tours on the cruise ships, and they specifically mention their flat bottom boats to eliminate the seasickness and the heave ho. I'll show it to you.
Right, but if the water is rough, it's gonna slap. It's very, very difficult.
Unless it's that heavy, you won't be able to flap.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know the. I don't know the science of it, but again, it does. Barsha Kivanti. What can I tell you? I'm not surprised. No,
I'm willing to concede.
No, it's okay. I'm just having a little fun. Okay. Good. Me neither. Okay. Take a look. At the next Rashi, Pasuk Chaf. Rashi, Pasuk Chaf, tells us the following. Let's read the Pasuk again. Just remember the Pasuk. So now we know that there's not much really to say about Yutas, so I skipped Mefarshim. There's not really any Mefarshim on Yutas. But again, it's a repetition or adding again this idea of the water getting stronger, getting higher, etc. And even in Yutas, we're already told the Vayichusu kol haharim, right? All the mountains are covered. Then we get more specific detail in Pasuk Chaf. Chamesh Esreyama, right? We said about 22 feet milamala gavru hamayim. Even above, right? It doesn't just mean that there was 22 feet of water. That'd be nothing. That wouldn't cover a little hill, let alone a mountain. It means 22 feet above the mountain. Vayichusu haharim. It wasn't just barely over. Take the highest mountain. It was 22 feet. The water even higher. Even higher than that. So go look, take a look at Rashi. Chamesh Esrei Amo Milamala, 15 Amos above, 22 feet. So he says this explicitly. Lamaila Shel Gova Kolaharim, above the height of all the mountains. La'achar Shehushvu Hamayim L'Rashi HaHarim. Once the waters reached the mountaintops, they were 15 feet even above that. Now, let me ask you a question. If we were living in the flatlands, let alone in a valley, how much higher is the water level than the ground level? Who knows, but it's a variable. A lot more than 22 feet higher, right? That's the simple understanding of the Pasuk, the simple thing of Rashi. In fact, Rashi's taking sides. There's a major, fascinating machlokas in the Medrash about whether this is just a natural phenomenon being described, or there's some particular miracle that I dare say I didn't fully appreciate, and my guess is that many of you never even imagined. Take a look at the next source. The Medrash says, Chamesh Esrei Amo. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechemya, there's a debate, a battle of heavyweights on this issue. Rabbi Yehuda Amar, let's skip for a second. To Rabbi Nechemya. Rabbi Nechemya is really what we've been assuming until now. Rabbi Nechemya says, Tesvav Amma Bahar, 15 Amas above the mountain, above a Benka Kol Shein. But when it comes to the valley, who knows what number it is? That's left unspecified.
Right.
Left unspecified. That's what we were assuming, as the Rashi says. So what's the first opinion? Rabbi Yehuda says, Chamesh Esrei Amma Bahar, V'Chamesh Esrei Amma V'Benka. No matter the contour or the height of the land, the water, for some divinely ordained reason, settled at 15 amos, or 22 feet above that. No matter how high or how low it was. There is zero, as far as I know, I'll let either Gene or Joel correct me, because I know there is zero possible scientific explanation for such a phenomenon.
It's not possible.
It's not possible naturally. Apparently, I'm not sure what motivated Rabbi Yehuda to say this, but apparently Rabbi Yehuda held that there's a whole other nace that most of us were never familiar with when it came to the flood. Namely, that the water was uneven. Hashem made a miracle that when the water level finally settled, if you were in the Canadian Rockies, so how big are those mountains?
Follow the contour.
How big are those mountains? Anyone know?
No.
15,000. Okay, good. Let's call it 15,000 feet is the highest peak in the Rockies. So the water there rested at 15,022 feet.
Yeah, but it follows the contour of the land.
But if you're in Baltimore, So I don't know, are we at sea level? We're below even, what are we? Wherever we were, but where we are, the water is only maybe 15 feet. Because it only was 15 feet above the ground. That would, it's got to be, now, yes or no? I don't know. At this point, I don't think.
It's not exactly every foot.
Right. So I'm not sure what would be the purpose of such a miracle. I'm not sure. And what do we gain by assuming it? I don't know.
He's taking literally the Pada Chamesh Esrei.
Across.
Yeah, across.
Yeah. Yeah, because it doesn't specify.
It doesn't say, you know, Yomala.
Give me 1 second. I'm sorry. Okay, so let's do the last pasuk, and then we'll call it an evening, and we'll be set for next week's share. Again, let's look back at pasuk Chaf Aleph, and then we'll see some very interesting pirushim on the pasuk. Pasuk Chaf Aleph, Vayigva kol basar, all the flesh, Haromais Halaretz expired, all the flesh of the world expired, everyone died at this point, Nebuch, Oph, Behema, Bechaya, Bechol Sheretz, Asheretz Halaretz, and finally, Bechol Ha'adam. Take a look at Eben Ezra. Eben Ezra says, now again, this pasuk is being described as, this is basically day 41. So Eben Ezra just makes a simple point, probably the way Moses read the pasuk anyway, but it's not, if you're a medakdek like Eben Ezra, it needs to be pointed out. He says, Kvar Gava, Perish Vayigva, doesn't mean that they all died on day 41. It means that by the time you got to day 41, everyone had been killed. When? At some point during the previous 40 days. Yigva, Pirish, Kfar, Gava. They had already died. Now this idea of the fact that they already died, and that leads to something very intriguing, both the Radak and the Malbim pick up on. Take a look at the next two Perushim. They're really very, very interesting. Very similar and complementary, and then after that, we'll conclude with an interesting idea from the Medrash Yaakov Meam Lois. Says the Radak, Yigva kol ha'adam, Omar v'chol ha'adam v'achrona. Right? The humans are the last one mentioned in the list. So, is there any? What does anyone want to take speculate? Anyone, why is there anything significant to the order? Why would human beings be last? Don't look, Harry, you're cheating. You can't answer, Harry. You're disqualified.
That humans had more of a will to live, like they were trying to swim above the water.
Okay, very good. Any other suggestions? Very good. Okay. So all of those things, including what Gene just mentioned about Tshuva, are contained more or less in the next three sources. Very fascinating. Again, I'm always trying to imagine, you know, put yourself in there, you know, what must have been going on, you know. It's like all of those, you know, science fiction books, you know, the end of the world, you know, all those, yeah, but imagine it for the whole world. It's unbelievable.
The word that's used by Yigva is unusual, why not the word like...
Yeah, it's very unusual. So, first of all, we'll see the Radak is going to point that out, okay? Very good. So, says the Radak here, top first line, Kolomar. Afilu ha'adam, exactly what was alluded to before. You got it on the ball. Afilu ha'adam, sheish lo das, tachbola li shomer min hara. Even a human being who has cunning and knowledge, and therefore he could, you figure out, escape or, you know, calculate, even the human couldn't escape this. After all, they could go up, they could go up onto the highest mountains, you know, to try to wait it out. Doesn't matter, whatever they tried, all the plans were for naught. This is the original source of, right? What is it? Gottracht? Meshtracht, Gottlacht. Right. So all the things they tried to do, the man tries when God laughs. You know, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. After all, he says, this isn't, you know, just your local Missouri flood. This isn't just your every, you know, 100-year tsunami. This is a once-in-a-human history, 15,000 feet high in some places. The water was enormous. There's no surviving this. And P.S. What's the Lashon of Gaba or Gavia? He Misa Mehira Voloshim Orichas. They died instantaneously. I don't remember who, but we saw this. So we saw this in earlier sources here that the people died. I can't remember who, one of the previous shurim. If you could find it, you're our official note taker. In one of our previous shurim, I don't remember which one it was, we saw some of Farshim point this out, that the death happened almost instantaneously.
Which you would say, if you could find the others,
he was a Rachmanis, of course, it's a Rachmanis. It's a Rachmanis. Take a look at the Malbim. The Malbim is basically taking the same thrust of the Radak, but I think there's just a little added nuance, so it's worth seeing him inside as well. Says the Malbim, the Seder Bazad, there's an order here. Oath, Behema, Chaya, Adam. What's the order? So the first thing he says, which is certainly was not in the Radak, again, it's not a contradiction, it's just complimentary. It's an additional idea, but I thought it was very interesting, I didn't think of it. Why did the birds go first? He says the birds were the first to go. Ki ha'of, l'chalishuso, gava tchila. Ayodeh ha'shetev haba milamala. The birds are flying, and all of a sudden, this incredible rain, bamish, it knocks them down right there. They didn't have to, before the water rose 2 feet, most of them were dead. It wasn't about, could the earth absorb the water, could the water come up, because for that purpose they could fly as high as they wanted. If it just had been that, they could have survived. But it was basically like bullets coming. I don't know if I mentioned this to you, but I think I may have mentioned this actually last year. But when we were in Costa Rica last summer, so one of the famous things, I mean, you can do it in other places in the world, but one of the things that Costa Rica is pretty well known for is, as I'm telling you this, I'm forgetting what it's called. When you go on these harnesses, you go from tree to tree, you know, not tree to tree, zipline. So we went, like, in the rainforest, my family, I mean, we were hundreds of feet in the air. Oh, it was awesome. The little boy in me was out and ready to go. So was the little girl and my wife, which is why she didn't do it. I was begging her. First I played nice, then I tried to make her feel guilty, and come on, oh, what are you, a baby? And she says, no, but I have one, 4 of them. I'm not doing this. Anyway, so she, in the end... check it out. I think I may have told you that we went on a kosher tour to Costa Rica with my parents and otherwise strangers from all sorts of places. But wouldn't you know it, there was one other couple from Baltimore, Yankee and Kathy Dinovitz. They were on the same trip. And the second, my wife said to the tour guide, can I go down? I've never seen another person so happy. Kathy, let's have the smile. Thank God, I didn't want to be the only one. I was too chicken to say anything. Once my wife said she wanted to go down, because they take you all the way up first, they give you a practice thing, and they teach you how to ride the harness. Anyway, everything was great. I think there was 8 different zip lines that we did. We were hundreds of feet in the air above the trees. In some cases, we were above clouds. In some cases, it was relatively short. We only zipped for, I don't know, 50 feet. But in some cases, you zipped over a whole lake at one point. Anyway, there was only one down. It was pouring on us. And you add the heavy rain and the speed which we're going, forget the fact that I couldn't see so much and I'm just getting wet. It hurt. It was like bullets on my face.
Are they ropes?
No, it's steel cables. No ropes. The shul's insurance wouldn't have allowed it. Anyway, your double harness, dollar. Anyway, I recommend it. It's fun. Anyway, I just was remembering this because it was the first time it really hit me. You know, rain can hurt. Rain can be painful. So if you're a little bird, the rain is going to take you down. So the animals are certainly stronger. What are behemoths? Behemoths are domesticated animals. So they made it so far. It's not surprising, says the Malbim, that the wild animals have a greater survival instinct and are stronger than domesticated animals. After all, some of them, since they have to survive in the wild, some of them have homes, you know, deeply buried in the ground or in deep caves and mountains. So they obviously originally developed those patterns of living, not to save themselves from a flood, but to save themselves from some bigger, stronger animal. But as a result, perhaps they could have held out even longer. Basar bein neged hageshem shabo milamala. So from the, actually, they could survive the rain part of it because they knew how to hide and be covered in different places. However, kishabo hamayim arashi harim gavu gam hema. But once the water rose so much, it was only somewhere, you know, that what they had, their advantage helped them in the first part. At that point, they should have been birds. But when they couldn't fly away, the water eventually caught up with them. So now we have that, now we have the birds, we have the animals. And finally, the human died. She'ein suffix, says the Malbim. No doubt. Sha'adam, shuhu bal tach boles. The same words as the Radak. He's very clever. Yosar mikulam, better than all the other species. Allah Rosh Harim, stama, he ran up to the top of the mountain. And here's something says the Malbim, which is so obvious and simple, but I tell you honestly, it never dawned on me. Wait, no one else had a boat but Noah. You know, he had a bigger boat. But you know, some guy had a rowboat, and maybe there was some rich guy. After all, they did a lot of chumas with all of their stolen money. They probably, some of them were very rich. You know, this one had a Cessna was a plane. One of these yachts. You know, but my parents are in Miami, and the last time we were in Miami, every year is the biggest yacht show in the world. It's for a week, I think, in the winter in Miami. Every 3 days last, I think, but it's in Miami every year. Aylacha, if you happen to be in Miami at the same time. If you like to go and look, it's fun, but if you have any idea of getting anywhere, like add an hour. The traffic is just overwhelming because there's thousands of people. So actually, when we were there, I didn't go. It doesn't tempt me at all, and so I wasn't going to tempt my kids. Actually, Yankee and Rachel Neuberger were there, and their high school age son went with Yankee. They went to see, and I don't remember the number. I don't want to misstate it almost. I'll try to remember it. But I remember I saw him in Shul one night when we were in Florida, and he says, I said, what did you do today? He said, I went to the yacht show. I said, did you see anything interesting? Yeah, I saw something. It was only $200 million. I think to fill up the gas was like $400,000 each time. I mean, like, just enormous boats. Some of them had those kind of boats. And, you know, listen, the cruise liners were there. I mean, you know, some people were running onto the cruise liners. You know, it's the opposite of Titanic. They're running off the boat. They'll say, hey, let me on the boat. Right? Not everyone could get on a boat, but probably thousands and thousands of people figured, all right, we'll survive. We'll ride it out.
They suffered the most. Because they saw.
Well, the question is whether they survived. The question is whether they survived. So says that you're right. It's true. Mm-hmm. The longer you survived, the more pain you had to see. That's true. You're right. That is a good point. But the bottom line, they thought, again, what it says, the thing, Tachbolus Yosef, they're going to be clever. Oh, I figured it out. You know, that's my rainy day fund. You know, I'm going to bribe the guy. He'll let me on the boat. You know, in the end of the day, he says the Malbim, it didn't matter. Ulam achar shalah mayim tesav amam miyal rosh yaharim. Once it got so high, at that point, it's almost a very poetic phrase, almost. Puskul kol tachbolus. You know what? There's only so many plans you can make. You can plan for all sorts of eventualities, but eventually, you're not going to survive. Hasfinos nishbaru. Again, a raya to the Radak. Again, similar. This wasn't some nice, calm water. Dude, I'm in a boat, so I survived. Other than the teva, nothing was strong enough, whether by natural or supernatural means, nothing else was strong enough in order to be able to survive. All the Takwa, some of the people, Taka made it 40 days, it sounds like. You know, the stronger made it to 30 days, and the stronger made it to 35 days. But by the time he got to the finish of the 40 days, no one was able to make it. Achigam min Adam gava veinenu. At that point, only human beings left, only living beings of any form, were those that were on the boat. So both the Malbim and the Radak, again, the Malbim is a little bit more expensive, but the basic thrust is already in the Radak, they tell us the same thing. The order is deliberate, and the explanation for the order is of a natural cause. Human beings are more adaptable than animals, wild animals are more adaptable than domesticated animals. Domesticated animals were stronger and more adaptable than the birds. Simple, you know, so to speak, laws of the jungle explanation. However, Gene anticipated something which I never had anticipated. Before, when I asked you why might the order be specific, you suggested something which the Yalkut Me'am Loes says. Yalkut Me'am Loes, which is like the famous Ladino or Italian collection of Medrash. So he says in a one-liner, says the Yalkut Me'am Loes, Du'u, Kibitchiva Meisu Shabruim, so he agrees with the other Mefarshim. Yes, this pasuk is deliberate, it's giving you an order. But unlike the other Mefarshim who said the reason was because of very obvious natural causes, says the Yalkut, Kedeliros im Yachsaru Tshuva. A whole different dimension, a whole different perspective. Again, yes, was it because they were being clever and running up the top of the mountain? And the answer is yes. But at the end of the day, why did Hashem allow that?
To give even till the last minute.
So you know what it's like? You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Rosh, you know, Tishrei, right? What do we say in Tishrei? Elo, you should do tshuva. Oh, before Rosh Hashanah, you should do tshuva. Ah, you gotta do tshuva Rosh Hashanah. Oh, you do tshuva Rosh Hashanah. Aser Shemay tshuva. Oh, you do an Aser Shemay tshuva. Yom Kippur, you do Yom Kippur. You have Ne'ilah. The doors are closing. It's Ne'ilah. Shema Yisrael. And what do we say? Well, if you didn't even do that, you have to Rosh Hashanah. You know, it's like, right? So too here, right? We said they had hundreds of years they had to do tshuva, right? We saw this at the end of Bereishis and beginning of Noah. Hashem kept on giving them delay. Finally, Hashem said, you know what? It's just getting worse and worse and worse. It's not getting better. Right? We saw this. Mefarshim pointed out even more than the Pesukim themselves did. How difficult the decision was to Hashem. He kept on procrastinating, giving him another chance. And finally, Hashem says, I'm going to do it. But even when he did it, he says, Noah, you're going to have to build 100 years of the ark. That's another 100 years. They get another chance. Then the rain starts coming. Another chance. You think, one more, that's Hashanah Rabbah. 40 days. But at the end, knock it out.
Now I have no doubt, though, that they did try to do tshuva. I'm sure as they were drowning,
they thought to themselves. Why? How do they know? Only if they ascribed. No, what if that would only make sense if you ascribed a punitive nature to the flood? Let me ask you a question.
Noah told them, first of all,
Noah talked to everybody, did he?
Right, well.
And they mocked him. So you're saying, so those people he spoke
those
to.
Those people did tshuva, but the fact is, this shows that when you do tshuva and you have insincere intentions, and when you do tshuva because you're dying, that is not a tshuva.
Could be.
You know.
Although we do have Makaros and Chazal to speak about.
You know, you can do tshuva.
Questions, but maybe the difference.
Rabbi, a very minor question, but in the listing that the Navi talks about, it's interesting that no reference is made to B'chol HaSheretz. You would think.
It was. I deleted it. It was, for the sake of space. I it's in the ellipses. He points out.
Sheretz would go first.
No, he points out that Sheretz is a very amorphous term. It includes lots of things. He says it includes things that feel like it hide underground or that could survive in some level of water.
Oh, so they had to survive.
Reptiles, you know, alligators and things like that can survive in the water. That's also included in Sheretz.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So, just the nature of those creatures. I didn't think it was interesting, so I left it out.
I see. Okay.
But yes, he does say that. You're correct.
I have one question. I don't know if it's grammatically any significance. In Chof Aleph, the last word, if you look at Chof Aleph, it's Kol Basar, Kol Sheretz, the Chol Ha'adam. It doesn't say the Kol Ha'adam. And I don't know if grammatically it makes any difference.
I don't know. The other thing, which I thought maybe you were going to say, and I don't know either, is why Ha'adam as opposed to Adam.
Mankind.
It's a singular. Adam is singular. Doesn't mean every person.
There is no hint in the Torah, obviously. But sometimes when I see the pictures of Mars, I wonder, could that have been a world that was destroyed? And
I don't know.
There's water. They found water. They found.
Well, that's the theory. That's what they think that might have happened.
That there used to be what? That there were people who lived there?
That there was life.
I have no idea, but I don't. As far as I know, there's nothing that would be. If it was true, I don't think that would threaten any principles of our belief. Maybe it was. Years and years ago, if you want, if you're interested, I can try to find it. I have it somewhere at home in a book. Rabbi Lamb wrote an article, I think, about, you know, are there Makaros that would, you know, allow for the possibility of extraterrestrial life. You know, when I was a kid, one of the defining experiences of my childhood was the movie E.T.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
E.T. Phone Home? E.T. Phone Home?
Yeah, I took my kids to see that.
So my parents would be.
This could be the idea of the worlds that were destroyed, you know.
Right, absolutely.
93 worlds.
Right, but I don't know if that means that I don't know if Mars would be one of those.
In terms of the waiting until the last moment to shoot, I was just mentioning Ari. I can't remember the exact words in the davening. Ad yom moso, I think.
Yeah, 100%. It's a Gemara. The Gemara in numerous places speaks about the idea of, for anyone who's here doing praying with fire.
Oh,
did you read today's day? Today's day. It talks about the particular person who was, it's a very famous Gemara, how he had visited every woman of ill repute in the world, and then he heard that there was one that he hadn't seen, and he travels a great distance with all the money, and when he's going, then he hears, you know, oh, you're going to really get clapped. You know, he finally dawns on him how big of a rusher he's become. I mean, there's such a lot of insight in that Gemara. Anyway, then he runs away. He runs away from her, and he goes to a mountain, and he says, the mountains, you know, you have to daven for me. They said, we can't do it. To the sun, they should daven for me. In the end, he cries. He really does a sincere tshuva. And the Gemara says he dies at that moment, and the Gemara says, Yesh kon olomo b'shachas. So you have the famous liturgy from Tisha B'Av, right, with the Asar Arugia Malchus, right? Which one of the Tanaim, I forget which one it was, when he's, Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus maybe was, which is the one who he's, you know, he has the damp cotton on his heart. He says, so they did it on purpose to prolong his death, and he says to the executioner, if you'll kill me quick, I'll give you, you know, and sure enough, he did it. And again, the Gemara says, so you do have this idea of a deathbed conversion. It does exist. Now, of course, it could be insincere. I mean, it could be the fake. You know, I think I told a joke in my first Shabbos tefillah, Yud tefillah for Harry Rashbaum, Parshas Nitzavim, 5 years ago, of the atheist who's swimming in the ocean, and a shark is chasing him, and the shark opens his mouth and is about to chomp him up, and he screams out, you know, to God, save me. The voice comes out from the heavens and says, but you don't believe in me. You're an atheist. So he realizes this, he's not a time to fool him. I'm just mentioning, I'm not going to do an insincere one now. It ain't going to work. Insincere doesn't work. So the PS to the story was, he says, well, okay, I don't believe in you, but why can't the shark believe in you? So God says, okay, your wish is granted. So, the voice recedes to the heavens, and the action continues, and the shark opens its mouth, and he's up there, and he's, and all of a sudden, the shark closes its mouth and bows its head. You can't believe it. And then all of a sudden, he hears the shark say, dear God, thank me for the food I'm about to eat. So you got to know what you're davening for. That was the